China is certainly going to try to separate the trade conversation from the oil conversation in this current situation.
Oil has become a slippery subject for the Middle East and Asia. It's Wednesday, April 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll also find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, Australia helps Sri Lanka's bombing investigation. Students learn Urdu. Amazon logs off in China. Smiling bears and heart-healthy food. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Oil prices reached a six-month high Tuesday after the Trump administration announced it would no longer exempt countries from U.S. sanctions if they continue to buy Iranian crude oil, a move aimed at imposing a complete oil embargo on Iran. Waivers granted to eight countries, including big Iranian crude importers China, India, Japan, Turkey, and South Korea, are due to expire May 2nd. The move would tighten oil supplies as seasonal demand picks up in the Northern Hemisphere, forcing importers to seek alternative supplies, a search made more challenging with production falling off in Venezuela and Libya because of domestic unrest and conflict. Iran was swift to respond, threatening to close the strategic Strait of Hormuz, a major shipment artery in the Middle East, if it cannot export oil. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more reaction from the countries most affected by the U.S. action, including China and Turkey.
The United States is no longer granting any exemptions from U.S. sanctions on Iranian oil imports. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the new policy Monday, saying that after giving countries time to reduce their imports of Iranian oil, the U.S. is going to zero.
Look, with the announcement today, we've made clear our seriousness of purpose. We are going to zero. How long we remain there at zero depends solely on the Islamic Republic Iran's senior leaders. We've made our demands very clear to the Ayatollah and his cronies. End your pursuit of nuclear weapons. Stop testing and proliferating ballistic missiles. Stop sponsoring and committing terrorism. Halt the arbitrary detention of U.S. citizens.
Iran responded defiantly, threatening to close the Strait of Hormuz, a strategically important choke point, if it is prevented from using it to sell its oil. Turkey also rejected the U.S. move, with Ankara's foreign minister tweeting, "The U.S. decision to end sanctions waivers on Iran oil imports will not serve regional peace and stability, yet will harm the Iranian people." Turkey rejects unilateral sanctions and impositions on how to conduct relations with neighbors. China had a similar reaction, with the foreign ministry spokesman saying China opposes the U.S. imposition of unilateral sanctions and long-arm jurisdiction. Analysts warn the oil crackdown could provoke a showdown between the U.S. and Iran and could imperil U.S. trade talks with China. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Jonas Nam, Assistant Professor of Energy, Resources, and Environment at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies here in Washington, spoke with VOA Asia's Ira Melman about how this latest move by the U.S. government affects Iran's biggest oil customer, China.
There's sort of a short-term and a long-term problem here, right? And the short-term problem is to try to satisfy the Trump administration's demands that are just incredibly abrupt and are asking them to make significant changes in a time frame that's going to make it very difficult for any of these countries to really shift their oil supply. In the long run, of course, there are ambitious renewable energy programs, ambitious programs to shift away from fossil fuels more broadly that are ongoing in many parts of the world. And so that may, in the long run, relax oil markets globally, but it's not something that will really change things by the end of the year or even maybe by, you know, the end of the decade.
Did this catch the world by surprise, do you think?
I think when the moratorium was released last year, there was sort of an expectation that this would probably continue for a longer time. I think there's been an unusual obsession with Iran in the Trump administration that's catching many analysts by surprise. And so the sort of intensity with which the Trump administration is taking this issue on, I think, has surprised many and has certainly defied expectations.
So what do you suppose might happen? First of all, how much does China rely on Iranian oil?
Iranian oil is about 6% of China's domestic consumption.
But it's still Iran's biggest market, is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Now, what happens now? China has been moving forward, as we understand it, in the field of sustainable energy. Is that enough to offset at least some of the loss of the whatever Iranian oil they're taking?
Well, it's unlikely to offset that in the next 2 weeks. And so I think it's really the time frame here that's making it difficult. We also have, you know, already trouble in Venezuela. Libya is not producing. So oil markets are tight, and Iran now dropping out of the picture is making it more difficult to shift to other sources.
Is this going to have, do you think, an effect on the ongoing trade talks? How much is this going to hurt China?
I could see that the Trump administration might anticipate that they can use the trade talks to pressure China into using other sources, but I can also see China maybe reducing its imports from Iran, but actually continuing to import and defying the U.S. in this situation. I think China is certainly going to try to separate the trade conversation from the oil conversation in this current situation.
How important is oil to the Chinese economy?
China's been importing oil, so its domestic production was insufficient starting in 1993. So it's been importing oil for a very long time. Since 2013, it's been the world's largest importer of oil, and so it doesn't have sufficient resources domestically. And so it's been strategically developing resources around the world and importing to grow its domestic economy.
But more and more, maybe you could explain how China is trying to develop its sustainable energy program.
Right. China is one of the world's largest investors in renewable energy, for instance, but that doesn't really directly compete with oil, since that is primarily for power generation. China doesn't produce any power domestically from oil, or at least not a significant extent. China also is pushing aggressively into electric vehicles at the moment. So in the long run, we could see some changes there. China now has basically adopted the California zero emissions vehicle system, where you have certain quotas that car manufacturers need to meet in terms of sales of electric vehicles for their domestic fleet. And so China is trying very much to get away from fossil fuels, also because of its air pollution situation domestically. But none of these measures are likely to be able to offset the oil imports from Iran, at least not in this very, very short time frame.
Are you able to speak about South Korea and maybe some of the other Asian nations, maybe India, maybe Taiwan?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with their kind of domestic political situation, but I think they all face a similar global picture in these oil markets, right? So oil markets are tight as they are. We've had a lot of issues in other parts of the world, and so there isn't much capacity for them to shift into. And so I think it's going to lead to rising prices at a time when the world economy is slumping a little bit. This is certainly not a good situation for them either.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Jonas Nam, Assistant Professor of Energy, Resources, and Environment at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies in Washington. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Kim Jong-un and Putin set for talks in Russia Thursday. Trial set for woman accused of lying to get into Trump Club. China's growing interest in Middle East sets off U.S. alarm bells. China lashes out at Washington's decision on Iran oil sanctions. Is health care still a basic right as communist Vietnam privatizes? Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Sri Lanka's prime minister says the suicide bombings that devastated the country on Easter Sunday could have links to Islamic State, which has claimed responsibility. Another official indicated that the bombings were in retaliation for last month's attack on mosques in New Zealand. On Tuesday, Sri Lanka observed a national day of mourning as the death toll climbed to 321. Australia says its counterterrorism officers from the federal police will help Sri Lanka with its investigation into the Easter Sunday bombings. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Attacks on churches and hotels in Sri Lanka killed more than 300 people and wounded hundreds of others. Most of the victims were Sri Lankans, including many Christians, who were attending Easter Sunday church services. Sri Lanka's Ministry of Foreign Affairs has identified 31 foreign nationals among the dead, with more than a dozen unaccounted for. The victims included several British and Indian citizens. Three children of a Danish business tycoon also died, along with an Australian mother and her 10-year-old daughter. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
Two Australians have lost their lives in this terrible massacre, and my just heart is full of grief for them and their families, as I'm sure all Australians are.
Prime Minister Morrison says officers from the Australian Federal Police, the AFP, will be sent to Sri Lanka to help authorities track down the attackers. The AFP has experience in international terrorist atrocities and played a key role in the investigation of the bombings on the Indonesian resort island of Bali in October 2002. More than 200 people were killed, including 88 Australians. Lal Wickremutunga, Sri Lanka's Consul General in Sydney, says Australian expertise will be important.
We welcome the support of the Australian Prime Minister. Australia has always been a close ally of Sri Lanka. It is yet not known as to what level of support. Well, I believe they would offer a full gamut of things. Recently, we had 1,000 defence personnel in Sri Lanka, so Australia-Sri Lanka ties are very strong.
Police in Sri Lanka arrested 24 suspects in a series of raids just hours after the attacks. A jihadist group, the National Tawhid Jamaath, is thought to be behind the atrocities. It's emerged that Sri Lankan authorities were previously warned about the organisation accused of Sunday's bombings. US media has reported that both American and Indian security agencies had alerted Sri Lanka about a threat earlier this month. However, reports say neither Sri Lanka's prime minister nor members of his cabinet were informed. The US State Department has warned of possible further attacks in a travel advisory. Phil Mercer for VOA News. Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, more than 50 people are believed to have died in a mudslide at a jade mining site in northern Myanmar. The mud flowed down on the workers from a lake. Local officials say three bodies have been recovered. 54 people remain missing after the accident late Monday in Kachin State. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. For most people, learning a different language is a choice. But for students at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, learning how to communicate in their selected region is a requirement. VOA's Shahar Majid spoke to students at SAIS who are studying how to read and write in Urdu and Hindi as part of their South Asian concentration.
My name is Chloe Howenstein, and I'm from Utah.
Chloe Howenstein is a master's degree student at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. She's specializing in international development and finance.
5 years ago, through a critical language scholarship program, I went to India to learn Urdu, where I studied Urdu all day for 2 months.
For many students at the school, known by its acronym SAIS, learning a foreign language can be challenging.
Urdu ki zuban bahut mushkil hai.
Urdu is a difficult language. I am weak in spelling and grammar, but speaking and listening skills are relatively easy.
Thoda sa aasan hai.
Well, Father Hussain has been teaching Urdu and Hindi at SAIS for 7 years.
So, Adam, Adam.
These Urdu-Hindi classes are mandatory for students majoring in South Asian studies.
Some people learn Urdu and Hindi because it's a job requirement. Some people learn because their family members speak Urdu or Hindi and they want to improve their communication with them.
Seema Hassan's father is from Pakistan, but she was born in the U.S.
Growing up, like I said, I was exposed to Pakistani culture, so my father never spoke to me in Urdu. But I was always curious about learning more about my Pakistani identity.
Many SAIS graduates end up pursuing global careers, so students there understand the importance of these foreign language classes.
World peace ke liye aur hamare global society ke liye.
It's important for world peace and our global society to understand each other.
Samajh sakte hain.
For Sahar Majid in Washington, D.C., Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coming up, a major online retailer scales back in China. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, a new powerful earthquake hit the central Philippines a day after a 6.1 quake hit the country's north and killed at least 11 people. There were no immediate reports of casualties or major damage from the new quake Tuesday, measured at 6.4. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for new developments. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Amazon's marketplace is closing in China, while a new rail link is opening new trade opportunities. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Amazon will be shutting down a part of its online business in China by mid-July. The decision underscores the difficulties the company has had competing with entrenched local e-commerce rivals like Alibaba and JD.com, which have long dominated the marketplace. Savio Chan is the president of U.S.-China Partners, a business development firm.
Well, in China, the e-commerce marketplace is really competitive, and it's virtually impossible to win without a local Chinese partner. Look at the history, right? The history tells you that, you know, Google is dead, Best Buy is gone, and even Uber, who is a shark in the business, still cannot win in China by itself. So the important thing is, in China's e-commerce marketplace, between Alibaba and JD.com and Pinduoduo and Xiaohongshu, the top four or five guys really combined dominate 90% of the marketplace. Amazon, you know, is only about 1.2% market share, and it's always going down.
Amazon entered the Chinese market in 2004, investing in warehouses, development programs, and programs to teach Chinese sellers how to get their goods to Amazon customers. Now, customers that log onto Amazon's Chinese web portal will still be able to see a selection of goods from its global store, but there won't be any product from local third-party sellers. Other businesses like Amazon's Kindle ebooks and cloud computing services will still be accessible. A railway reconnecting Cambodia and Thailand was officially inaugurated this week. Service between the two countries was cut off in the early 1970s when the tracks were destroyed during Cambodia's civil war. Bilateral trade between Cambodia and Thailand currently stands at approximately $6 billion, and the revived rail link is expected to boost trade between the Southeast Asian neighbors. It will also reduce travel time between the two countries. Cambodia's Prime Minister Hun Sen.
The railroad will help develop the national economy of both countries, Cambodia and Thailand. Especially, it will link the countries to ASEAN and the great sub-Mekong region.
Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen and his Thai counterpart Prayut Chan-o-cha rode together to the Cambodian town of Poipet on Monday to mark the occasion. Thai officials say regular cross-border rail service is expected to be restored soon. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. Myanmar's Supreme Court has denied the appeal of two Reuters journalists convicted of violating the country's centuries-old Official Secrets Act. The two were arrested in December 2017 after meeting with two police officers who gave them documents as they investigated the massacre of 10 Rohingya by police and soldiers. More on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, one of the key components of empathy is what scientists call facial mimicry. It seems complicated, but it's as simple as smiling when someone smiles at you, and that conveys a lot of information. Scientists have always thought that animals who do it, humans included, are a small group, but maybe not. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
The sun bear is indigenous to Southeast Asia and considered a vulnerable species by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. The bears have a reputation for being loners and very shy, but it turns out they are very communicative with each other. Marina Davila Ross from the University of Portsmouth says it is the way they communicate that makes them special.
So we examined the facial expressions of sun bears. We found that they mimic each other quite rapidly. When one sun bear is showing a facial expression during play, the other one is showing exactly the same facial expression. And such precise mimicking has only been found before in gorillas, and we know that humans are showing these behaviors.
Having found this behavior in the sun bear, Davila Ross and her colleagues want to look at more species to see if this kind of special facial mimicry is not that special after all.
We believe that this is something that is more of a common ability that we can find across different mammalian species. And it's really important for research to examine more animals that are not primates and dogs for these complex behaviors.
But the researchers are quick to point out that just because these animals are capable of facial mimicry does not necessarily mean they are using it like humans use it, to share feelings, for instance.
And we can't say anything like whether we know bears have emotional contagion or even empathy, but we can say that one of the key behaviors associated with it, which is facial mimicry, is there.
So what are the bears communicating? The researchers are not completely sure, but think the bears may be telling each other when their playtime gets too rough. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Be careful what you eat to protect your heart, as VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
Eating a lot of certain foods may put you at a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. But a couple of new studies say when you eat could also affect your heart health. A new study published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology provides further evidence that missing breakfast puts you at an increased risk of death due to heart disease. Another study of patients who were recently discharged from a hospital after being treated for a heart attack takes mealtimes a step further. Published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, the study suggests heart attack patients who skipped breakfast and ate dinner right before bedtime were also 4 to 5 times more likely to die, have another heart attack, or experience angina. Study authors suggested at least a 2-hour break between dinner and bedtime. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on the internet, you know where, iTunes and SoundCloud, VOA Asia Facebook, and you can find all of our programs at voanews.com. So if you've missed a program, just click on voanews.com, look up VOA Asia, you'll find the program you want. You'll also find us on the radio, CCU Radio at National Chung Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And of course, we thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Cedric Franklin, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.